It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 238, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, Facebook fact-checking, new displays, AI in housing.
Good afternoon, Gary. Welcome back after the holiday season.
Yeah. Hi, Leo. Happy New Year.
Have you, did you have a quiet holiday or a busy one?
Pretty quiet. Yeah. You know, Thanksgiving's the more of the travel, seeing family kind of holiday for me. So the end of the year stuff is a little quieter.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you?
Like I've said in multiple times, boring is good, and the holidays were actually kind of nice and boring. 2024 was a busy year for a variety of reasons, but I did enjoy not having to worry too much about holidays. Anyway,
so I have
dive right into it. Yeah, you've got a good one to start.
Update. Yeah, because we talked about this digital license plate thing. And so quick summary, we talked about it a couple months ago, just a license plate that goes in the back of your car, and it's like e-paper, and it's supposed to be locked down where it'll show your actual license plate number. But things like, you know, your inspection notices will be updated automatically over the air. And then you could even do things like put it into stolen mode, so it'll say it's stolen or whatever.
Remember that.
And we talked a lot about security with it. And all of the things we talked about had to do with other people hacking into your license plate, which we talked about like, oh, can't really be done. What we didn't really talk about was you hacking into your own license plate, which now has been done. Even though these things, I haven't seen one on the road, and I'm sure most people haven't. Somebody's already figured out how to jailbreak one of these, and you could basically then control it yourself, which is not, it's a very different kind of security, because obviously it's your car, it's your license plate. If you want to display something that's wrong back there, then it's your problem if you get a ticket, I guess. But it can be used for things like, for instance, changing your license plate temporarily when you go through a toll, or changing your license plate if you're on the run from the law, that kind of thing. So it is concerning in a way. And the developer of this, or person that did this, talked about it more in terms of the more of a gray area of like being able to do things that would normally require a subscription, but you could just do them directly with the license plate, like changing the style or something. It is interesting, and it's concerning, and I think it may be enough to actually kill the idea. You know,
it's funny. My first thought when you said that. You control it yourself, is if I were to use something like this, I would use it in real time to say, back off when I'm getting tailgated.
Yeah, there's that. The problem is, I think if these all need to be sanctioned by state governments, and the state governments are going to say no if it turns out there's any chance that somebody could just change it so that they can't now write them a ticket or, you know, toll, you know, appropriately, you know, charge them with tolls. Of course, this is really nothing new in terms of what you could do already with traditional license plates. And in fact, it is being done en masse. People driving around without license plates. People driving around with expired plates, people stealing license plates and driving around with those are happening a lot. And actually, I guess the general feeling is there's been a big uptick in the last few years of that. Certainly, I know in the local Reddit subreddit for my city, it's one of the things people love to complain about is how many expired tags they see or how many cars they see driving around with just no license plate, because law enforcement has kind of lowered the priority on such things. So you can imagine, you know, people previously would not have dreamed of doing that. Now just do it. And they're like, it's been months. Nobody seems to care.
Kind of funny. I think we mentioned this last time, too, that at least in Washington state, license plates are no longer embossed. Right. They're no longer.
They used to be same like here. Yeah.
Like 3D. Now they're just flat. Mm-hmm. They're clearly being printed on metal. But what that means is that it is incredibly easy now to print your own. Just find there's some high quality paper out there that's quite durable. Print your own fake license, throw it on there, and you know, you may never get stopped.
Right. And same thing here. It's like maybe it's not as easy as using an app on your phone, but if you know you're going to rack up $15 in tolls because you're in a rush and you're going to use the, expressway that has that. You
Right.
could have something you slap on top of your license plate, and as long as you don't get pulled over, you get away with it. Anyway, it is interesting. I predict this idea is now dead, simply because it needs to be voted on by states. This is enough of an excuse for them to go and say, yeah, no, that's not.
The system
So
they've got
there's
works well
that.
enough that, yeah, we're not.
Yeah. Oh, well, so much for that. Speaking
So,
of l facts and such.
facts are so out of fashion.
Oh, they're very out of fashion right now. Yes.
So the breaking news this morning was that Zuckerberg announced that they were going to get rid of their fact checkers on Facebook, and I would assume that would also include Instagram and Threads, and basically replace them with whatever's happening over on Twitter, where basically the community can provide feedback on various posts, but the actual fact-checking part that they've been doing is apparently going to go away. And of course, now there's been a wonderful string of posts on Facebook announcing this, along with some random, wrong, derogatory fact about Zuckerberg himself, to see, if they actually ever get it taken down or what happens to it. I thought about this for a while this morning because, to be honest, fact-checking is really hard. There are some aspects of it that are obvious, right? I mean, there are some things that are facts and are not facts. That's, sky is blue is not debatable. Even though there are people that will debate it, it's one of those things that's an obvious fact. Where things get weird is in the more controversial areas. Especially when those controversial areas stride or span a political divide. Things like vaccinations and that kind of stuff come to immediately to mind. It's you want there to be objective fact checkers, but if people don't believe that they are objective, they end up doing more harm than good. And I think that that's the position that Meta is coming from, that the fact checkers, that his claim was that the fact checkers they had employed had a bias. Yes, they're going to have a bias. We all have biases, but hopefully that bias is to the truth.
Yes.
And apparently, that's not what he was, or they were seeing, or at least that's the excuse, if you will, that he was using to make this change. I just find it almost an unsolvable problem. I don't know that there's a good answer. I will say that I believe that the new answer is worse than the old answer, but I think it remains to be seen exactly what transpires on Facebook as the fact checkers go away.
Yeah, I mean, this topic predates the internet. I remember in when I went to journalism school in the early 90s, talking about this back before just anybody could publish anything, right? You only had certain publications, newspapers, magazines, and TV and such, and just about fact checking and the blurriness between things that are hard facts, all the way to things that are opinion, and then all this stuff in the middle. And it's so hard to figure out how to do it right. Part of the problem is that a lot of times people aren't debating hard facts. Like something is, green or blue, or something exists or doesn't exist. They're expressing kind of like a logical train of thought. I think this bill is good because it will do this, or I think that something being developed will be a benefit or not, or whatever. And it's tough. One of the problems that we run into in a world where anybody can publish anything is that there's no way to like tell, or it's hard to tell who's an expert at something and who isn't. You recently wrote in your newsletter, you had a thing about like it's okay to admit that you don't know, you don't have enough information to form an opinion
Right, yeah,
on
they
something. Yeah. And the problem is that that's a great thing that everybody should adopt, except that not everybody adopts it. And unless
nobody.
100% of the people adopt it, we run into trouble because you could have you know, a debate online between somebody who is an expert and somebody who doesn't know very much about a subject, and it's seen as a valid debate, which it shouldn't. You know, you should be looking at, like, if in the pre-internet days they had on TV, like, we're going to debate animal conservation, you know, legislation. We're going to have an expert on animal conservation legislation, and we're going to have this guy who knows nothing about it, and they're going to debate. People would be like, why are you doing that? Like, what's the point? And probably the expert would drop out and say, I'm not debating somebody who doesn't know anything about this. You know, find somebody that disagrees with me, but we're both experts. But you don't have these big debates anymore. You have individual people posting things to places like Facebook that may or may not know anything, and they kind of start at equal weight. The expert on something posts something just as easily as the person who knows nothing about it and just has this opinion based on the kind of the absence of knowledge of the subject. It's impossible. I think it's a bad idea to get rid of fact checkers. I think fact checking can be done in a way that it's part of the system. And because the important thing is you don't have to fact check every post. You fact check the claims. So somebody claims something, like they say that, you know, this medicine works in this way, and that turns out to be false. You fact check the claim. Now you put that in your database of, like, we've already figured this out. Anytime somebody states, you know, this falsehood, this lie, we can now just apply this fact check to it. We don't
Which I
need to.
think is what they've been doing.
Right. Well, they should keep doing that. And it at least in it's just about the number of things. Like, you know, there's going to be the number one lie of the day, right? The thing that's repeated the most. And there's going to be, you know, the number two lie, number three, and it goes all the way down until you have this long tail of tiny little falsehoods, and you can't fact check them all. But can you at least fact check the top 100? You know, and cover 99% of the bases, and at least then people can't claim false things about the polio vaccine or something, you know, and say, we've taken care of that. That nobody's going to lie on Facebook about the polio vaccine, and that's done. And then we can deal with the, like, people debating efficiency of windmills in the Texas energy grid. That's something we don't have time for. You know, that goes down, you know, past the top 100.
There are a couple of things that came up for me. One is that not all facts are facts. Do you remember a couple of years ago? In fact, it was 10 years ago because it came up as a memory somewhere. The dress.
Yes,
What
that's right.
color is this dress? And people were adamant that it was either gold and white or blue and something else. I forget, or black or something else. And that's because they literally saw the dress differently. And yet each side would claim, just again, no, the other side is absolutely wrong because that's not what I see. That's something that fact-checking just doesn't solve. All right. It would have to come up with the nuances to say some people see it this way, some people see it this way. Neither of them are wrong. Neither of them are absolutely right. The other thing you mentioned about the, great, we've got this concept of, we have this database of issues that we know are wrong that are being posted on Facebook. And I'm assuming that that would be prioritized by popularity, right? The topic that's getting the most traffic across the platform would probably be more highly prioritized in terms of getting, getting fact checked. Like you said, okay, here's a fact about polio that we know is the fact. This is what it is. And we can say that. And now the fact checkers cannot. The people that feel some other way, as you say, will be given an equal platform. And that just feels wrong. Like you said, experts, you don't argue against experts if you don't know what you're talking about. And that's almost the definition of social media these days.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's a shame too, because if you do disagree with the expert, it opens up a path for two experts to debate something. Right. And that would be more interesting. Of course, the problem is sometimes you don't have an expert on the other side. I remember there used to be this, probably younger people don't even know about this, but this equal time idea back from our youth when, there would be things on TV, political things, and there'd be equal time to both sides, right? It had to be if you gave a 15-minute interview with an expert that had one opinion on something, you had to give 15 minutes to the other, the other side of it.
Usually
And
applied to politics, but yes, I can imagine.
very much to politics when, because there was something to debate, right? There was like the, oh, this new tax bill or something, and the thing about the equal time, but one of the reasons it's not around anymore is because the assumption back then was you would have two experts and both would be very knowledgeable experts and both would kind of acknowledge each other's expertise and say, yeah, I disagree with this person, but their process is logical, like how they're getting to their conclusion. That doesn't happen today. You could
Right.
have somebody that says, here, I've got, here's all this facts. I know this stuff. I'm educated in this. I've worked in this field and here's this thing. And then somebody else comes that has none of that and just says, I want equal time, right? Why is my opinion not as valuable as yours? Well,
Right.
it's not as valuable because you just don't know anything about the subject or your position is ridiculous, which often happens. And I think I remember in the early days of like the death of the equal time stuff, where a lot of like stuff on like, UFOs and aliens and everything, where it was like, let's have an expert on both sides talk about this. It's like, how do you do that? So you're going to give 15 minutes to a guy saying, well, let me talk about the Fermi paradox and all the astrophysics and all this stuff. And then another guy's going to go and say, oh, I've talked to people who have been abducted and probed. It's like it doesn't, those two sides don't fit, but that's everything on social media. You have people debating all from all sorts of weird angles and coming up with stuff, and then even coming up with these strange things like the I'm just asking a question kind of deal.
That's not a debate. That
But
is
it's seen as one. It's
it's fishing, right?
posing as
It's
one.
trying to trying to get the other person to engage in a way that they honestly shouldn't have to engage.
Right, and trying to get people. I mean, you can express an opinion to somebody without actually expressing the opinion
Yes.
by saying, well, I'm just asking the question, why are things like this? And you never say that you think they should be different or that
Right.
you think they should be the same, but you're implying it. And you know that out of your audience, whoever's looking at that post or watching that TV show, that a certain percentage will hear it and take it literally. And just say, yeah, they were just asking that question. It's a weird question to ask. But a certain percentage will actually forget that
They will adopt it as a
and
belief.
adopt it. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
It's very difficult. And this whole thing's very concerning. And man, I just don't know where we go from here. I guess,
Think about all we could really say is that time will tell. We've seen it. I mean, honestly, we kind of sort of know what this looks like because this is the kind of stuff that has been happening on Twitter since Musk took over, right? The model that Zuckerberg is adopting is apparently the same model that's currently happening over on Twitter slash
Yeah,
X.
apparently,
And
because I'm not there, and I don't think you're there either. So,
I do not pay any attention to
yeah.
Twitter anymore. But hearsay, we certainly hear a lot about the kinds of things that are going on over there. And I suspect that there is a possibility that it may not get as bad because the audience right now on Facebook is significantly more diverse, I think, than Twitter's ever was. You don't have, families on Twitter. You don't have, talking to each other over Facebook. So it may not never get quite as bad, but I do think it's going to head off in that direction.
Yeah. So I guess I don't know. I don't know where we go from here.
Let's talk about podcasts since we're in the middle of one.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So we talked before on the show about an AI thing called Notebook LM. Which is basically the whole idea, and the reason it's called Notebook LM is the way it was originally intended to be used, I think, I gather, is you threw a bunch of stuff into it, like a st couple studies, some PDFs of s stuff, whatever. You threw a bunch of stuff into it, and then you can then use that as kind of like a way to ask questions about the material, right? So imagine a kid, you know, somebody studying for a test could throw all the material in there and then talk to the AI about that material. Or if you just want to be brought up to speed on something before a meeting, you know, you could throw all the material from work into, you know, the thing, and then you could talk to the AI about it. But a side feature that became very popular was the podcasting feature, where you could throw a bunch of stuff in there and then say, all right, now create a podcast. And you got an AI-generated podcast that was both, the script was AI-generated, and then it was voice-acted by AI with two hosts, a male and a female host, who then did a very convincing fake podcast about it. And it works, you know, people that, first time people hear this, it's, they're amazed, right? And it's, it, I haven't personally used it like I thought I would, but you could basically throw a bunch of things in there. You want to be brought up to speed on something, have it create it, put it on your iPhone and go for a walk. And then you think you're listening to a podcast of two people talk about the material.
Right.
There are a few updates to that the last week. And one of the interesting updates is you can interrupt the hosts. If you're still on the site, obviously if you export it as a file, you can't. But if you're still on the site, you hit the play button and you could be listening to it and you could click a button and interrupt them like it's a live podcast and ask a question. It's really interesting. And you do it with their voice too. So they could be debating, you know, whatever it is, and you could hit that thing and they'll actually, like one of them will say, oh, yes, yes, we have a question. You know, and then wait for you to respond. And then you can ask a question. Oh, well, what do you mean by this? Or is, does the study have anything, whatever? And they'll be like, great question. Let's talk about that. And they go in like they're taking audience questions. I did it as part of a group I was in talking about AI. And we did it live where the host kept interrupting and asking questions and even bringing us into it and saying like, you know, Gary, I wanted to know about this. And they were like, oh, okay, well, thanks, Gary, for that question. Let's go and take a closer look at it. And it was really interesting. It was a neat way to interact with information. Have you given it a try yet?
The only thing I've done with Notebook LM is the first example where I threw one of my articles at it, a lengthier article, and had it generate a podcast of it. And it was an amazing podcast. It was really well done, with one exception. They were overly effusive about the wonderful characteristics of the guy that wrote it. They were basically over the top, you know, talking about how wonderful I was. And that just, you know, not only did that feel icky, but it's certainly not something that I would ever have chosen to promote in area, publicize in any way.
Yeah.
But the bottom line of the information that it was talking about, it did a really, really good job of, like you said, not just interpreting it, but turning it into a discussion.
Yep. Just a new way to digest information. Like I envision myself throwing some long Wikipedia pages into it and then taking the dog for a walk and then listening to this thing and then coming out of it knowing something and hopefully having a fewer errors, you know, fewer hallucinations.
Right.
Because it's based on, you know, here's a document. Take this document as fact and talk about it. And it's way to deal with that.
That's one of the ways, though, that I end up using pretty much all AI is I don't ask it for information because the information that it's getting is questionable. The interpretation that it's making on that information is questionable. Whereas if I give it a pile, albeit an article to summarize or something else to use as a database, it's restricted to the information that I've given.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some faith that that information is at least factual to the extent that I was
sure.
able to make it.
So, I mean, you were just going to read the article anyway. So if there was an error there, it's not being introduced by the AI.
Right. Correct.
It was there originally. Yeah.
You know if there's a size limit to how much you can give Notebook LM?
I don't know, but I've given it some. I've heard of people giving it some really long things, and I've given it quite a few things. Like I gave it did I give it the whole Mac user guide or something at one point? Like a fairly long, big PDF of stuff, just as background information.
Interesting. The reason I ask is because I think you know I've been itching to come up with a way to come up with I'll call it an AI version of Ask Leo.
Yeah.
But basically, I'm thinking of if I can export all of my articles, and there's like 4 or 5,000 of them now. Can I just import all of that into something like Notebook LM and have it then be able to Q&A against that database?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's designed to be exactly that, but it's certainly in the area. There are other things I've seen that are trying to be like the Instagram AI, I think is trying to be that. But
Funny, the one thing we didn't talk about with respect to AI, because this is diverging a little bit, was Meta's introduction of completely AI personalities.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I did hear about that.
Yes, and it's funny, the one article that I saw that actually linked to one of them, it was already gone.
Oh.
So I suspect it was not well received, and that Facebook did the right thing and took it down. But I just thought that was really interesting. Do you not have enough people on your platform that you have to make
Yeah,
more?
I know. Well, maybe, I mean, part of the problem, because I saw it and I almost responded to the person that posted it, that well, can it be that much worse than most of the people most of the real humans on Facebook? You know, it's just I mean, at least it'll give you somebody to interact with if you don't have anybody to interact with, or don't have anybody you feel like interacting with right now.
Right, it's very
I I
bizarre.
mean, I don't think if it's gone, I don't think it's gone forever. Like, I think it's
Oh,
being refined. I mean, I think having assistance for apps like Facebook may be kind of a future thing. Like, instead of interacting with Facebook, where just like, here's your screen, here's a bunch of posts, here's all this stuff, it's more of a like, hi there, your friend, so and so is on a trip to wherever and just posted some pictures. And then there's also this news story posted by, this person and all that. And then you're like, yeah, don't show me stuff by that guy anymore. But I do want to see those pictures from my friend's vacation, that kind of thing.
your own personal Facebook docent, almost somebody who,
Yeah. And there was, God, what book was it? It was Neal Stephenson's Fall or Dodge in Hell from a few years ago, where he has a little bit of a future America kind of thing, where everybody has a filter or a person they pay to filter their feeds. So you don't have to see the spam and other things that you don't want to see, because you subscribe to a filter who is like a real person, although I think now it would be an AI that would actually go through and filter out stuff. And I do that on Blue Sky. You can not only filter people and say, I want to block people, you can block words.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
I've got
So,
an add-on for Facebook where I do that, but
yeah. And it's, the problem is, of course, is you, if it's a, it's hard to use word blocks to block out, like, if somebody, like, if you're a scientist researching vaccines and you want to block out, idiots talking, about lies about vaccines, how do you block that out? Because if you block out the word vaccine,
right.
then your good stuff's gone too. But an AI could potentially go and block out. Just get the gist of what's going on, what's being said, and block it out. And as long as there's a flood of information, you should be fine. In other words, a false positive, where something you wanted to get is blocked, won't matter, because if it's important, you're going to get that
It'll pop
story,
up another way.
yeah,
Yeah.
the 10 different times from 10 different people.
Right.
So yeah, but anyway, yeah, interesting. Interesting stuff. We'll have to see. I'm not on Facebook much anymore either, so I don't know. Even if I started now to pay attention to it again, I wouldn't be able to notice the difference because I haven't been using it enough.
Right.
So,
And I've got that same problem in a sense because, like I said, I've got a it's actually a browser plugin for my desktop browsers that does things like remove ads and a few other different things. But one of the things that it does is it actually will make posts disappear if they contain certain keywords. So that gives me a skewed experience of what Facebook is like today as well. Right. My Facebook is clean.
Right.
What a quote unquote normal person is seeing.
Yeah, I guess we'll just have to pay attention to what other people are finding
Yeah.
to see if these effects work, which I doubt, or how much worse they make things.
Right. So, when was the last time you were at CES?
Never.
You've never been to CES?
No, because back in the day when I would have gone to CES, I instead it was after Apple split off from it. So I went to the Apple Mac World Expo
Ah, okay.
instead, and I went and I was also into games, so I went to the E3
Oh, I remember
Electronics
E3.
Expo.
Yep.
And so those were, since I was going to those, CES was just not going to happen for me. So
Right.
I never went, I've never been, and I get the gist. E3 was basically the same kind of thing, but for games.
Sure. It's funny because CES is going on right now, and I've been a couple times years ago, a long time ago, but I was taking a look at the news stories about current CES, the one that's going on right now. And I was looking at, some of the hottest items, the hottest new things, and here's the gadgets that are being released and so forth. And I just walked away with a, eh, yeah, it's the stuff you kind of expect from CES, I suppose, but there just wasn't anything really earth-shattering, at least not for me. I don't know if you feel the same way, if you ran across anything interesting there or what.
I haven't run across, because I pay attention to the news stories that come out, and yeah, I haven't seen anything interesting. I mean, the two things that interest me the most, I guess, that caught my attention are minor things. One was I saw that Lenovo showed a rollable display, right? So, companies are continuously trying to, can we have foldable displays? Can we have curved displays? Well, there's different ways to have displays. So they sh demoed a rollable display. So the idea is think of a normal laptop, but half the screen is actually curved underneath the keyboard. And you could pull the screen up and you get
Okay.
a highly vertical display, as it kind of like reveals more that's coming out of from inside the laptop, which I thought, I looked at it, and it's one of those things you look at and you instantly say, yeah, this is never going to see the light of day. Like, nobody's going to have this. Maybe they might release something. I'm never going to see it in a Starbucks near me. It's just not going to happen. Tons of stuff like that. Matter of fact, the whole idea that they would, these displays, they keep trying to come up with these displays. And the more I see of foldable, rollable displays, I really feel the answer is either having multiple displays is like, that's not a problem. Like, it's not as big a problem as people think, having a line between displays. Tons of people have multiple screens. I'm looking at two displays on my desktop right now. I don't see any advantage to ever having like not a line between them. Like, I need it to be an unbroken path. My display in front of me is big enough to watch any one single thing, like a movie or whatever. I can have another window in the other display. The same thing with like laptops and phones. Like, I think we will have foldable phones. Apple will eventually come out with a foldable iPhone. They will eventually become more standard. But there'll just be two displays and there will be a thin line between them of some kind. And that'll be fine. Everybody will be perfectly fine with that. Nobody, the regular users, aren't going to be, oh, I wish I could spend twice the amount of money to not have this thin line between the two displays. So, yeah, just another one of those things. I mean, I guess, everybody wants to hedge their bets and try to develop technology in case it happens, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Funny, you reminded me of something that I ran across. I believe it's at CES. I think what I saw was CES related. It's from Pro Display, it's a transparent screen. So I don't know that most screen output actually uses the alpha channel, but the very concept of being able to look through the screen, you're looking at, say, an animated GIF on screen. And everything that is the GIF is visible, and everything that isn't is whatever's behind your screen. It looked interesting. I'm not sure what all of the applications are going to end up being, But I think that there's some possibilities there that folks aren't necessarily thinking about. Doing a transparent display in front of something else specific could potentially have some interesting applications. Anyway, you're talking about displays, made me think of that. So I threw the link
Yeah.
into the show notes.
Yeah, and another related to displays, of course, is, I've been using Apple Vision Pro all, for, well, it's 8 months now, and there was a tiny, tiny mention of the Apple Vision Pro at CES in a weird way, but it caught a few writers' eye that they mentioned it like this, and it certainly was interesting to me. Nvidia, of course, who has a ton that they are showing at CES, they have a product called GeForce Now, or GeForce Now, which is something I've talked about before on our podcast. And it allows you to stream games. So you're not installing the game on your computer. The game is installed on a very suitable computer somewhere on a server farm, and
Right.
then you're playing the game by streaming the screen, and then you said the send the keys and the clicks. And if you've never tried it before, you probably think, how could that ever work? But it does work, and I've used it to play a lot of games. One of the advantages is that you could play Windows games on a Mac,
Right.
and it's not even a complication. You're just streaming it. It doesn't matter that you're on a Mac. But there are other advantages as well. Like, for instance, you don't need to install the game on your computer. It doesn't need to take up all that space. Your computer doesn't have to be suited for the game in terms of its power or anything. It's all done, remotely. And it's nice to actually play a game, and then you're only you, like you, there's no impact for you. You log in, you play it, you finish the game, you don't play it anymore, and there's nothing to uninstall and all that. Now, the mention that Nvidia did was saying that they will soon have their player compatible with the Apple Vision Pro.
Right.
So the Apple Vision Pro, of course, the thing that would be cool to do is play more games in it. And there
Right.
are a bunch of games you can get for it. They're all very casual game like, not hardcore game. And of course, you can show your Mac's screen in it. And I've done that to play some more hardcore games like real time strategy with a nice big ultra wide display in the Apple Vision Pro, and it's really cool. I like doing it. If GeForce Now is available in it, then you could play all these Windows games, big, A and A triple A titles and everything, in your Apple Vision Pro. They're still 2D. They're not going to become 3D or anything like that. But at least you get this very nice screen, where it's definitely something I would want to do. And yeah, they say that in a month or something, they will have that available. So that's kind of cool. I'm looking forward to doing that, and playing some of the game. And the neat thing is, if you own a game, and you're using it on Steam usually, if you own a game on Steam, you can go to GeForce Now. There's even a free tier that you're limited in how much you could play per day or whatever. But even in the free tier, you could go log in, and then you log into your Steam account, and then you play that game. Like, there's no additional, like, you don't have to purchase the game again or anything like that. So I don't even have to, like, oh, I'll have to get a game to test it. No, I have a dozen games in Steam that I could probably test this with on day one, and that'll be cool. At least it'll be something until when we get a better kind of gaming experience going on in the Vision Pro.
What I thought was interesting, you mentioned Nvidia behind all this. Just very coincidentally, I was taking a look at news headlines this morning, and there were two about Nvidia in sequence, but you can tell that the time difference was significant. The first one was mentioning that Nvidia stock was going up in anticipation of their CEO, I guess, making some kind of an address to the CES crowd. The next headline talked about the precipitous drop in the Nvidia stock price because the talk didn't have some random thing that everybody was expecting the talk to have. Stock market, people's expectations, very fickle. Very, very fickle.
Yeah, I think half the time it's the real reason. Like, for instance, today was a generally down market day. So the question is was the journalist actually even correct in saying that that's the reason it went down? Because yeah, a lot of times, especially having, Apple is one of those stocks that will do funny things. Like if you don't look at it carefully, it'll go up like a few percent before an announcement in the weeks leading up to announcement, and then drop slightly afterwards, even though they announced exactly what they said. And the whole idea being, oh, that but the all of that, it going up, that was part of that. So it went up 3%, but it actually went up 4% and then down 1%. But the net gain of 3% was because of that thing that they announced. It was just that it was built in. Everybody already predicted that. So
And there wasn't one more thing that they could, surprise everybody with.
And even when there is, a lot of times those one more things were always already, things that they people knew about or had been rumored and had been built into it. So anyway,
So you got an interesting one coming up here.
Let's see. So this is something we haven't talked about, but it's been an ongoing story. So this has to do with rent, right? The rent is too damn high, right? And the rent's going up. One of the reasons that they've been going up apparently is from collusion, price collusion. But it's not the type of price collusion that usually would take place in the past. Price collusion usually is when you have like three companies offering the same thing and they're competing, and then they all get together in a back room and say, "Hey, why don't we all agree to raise the price at the same time? What's everybody going to do, right?" And then we all can make more money. And that's price collusion. Well, there's a new type of price collusion where the party that comes in that says, "Hey, let's raise the price," isn't one of these companies, right? It's software or a company making software. So there's a company that makes real estate software, and the idea, this sounds like a typical tech pitch, is let's have software that will help companies that rent out places, so big landlords. Not talking like individuals. We're talking like companies that have like tons of apartment buildings and stuff. Like it can help them set prices, right? Instead of trying to guess how much a one bedroom apartment should go for in Chicago, this will just look at all the data and say this is what the market price for a one bedroom apartment is. And it seems really useful, right, for these companies to be able to do that instead of maybe doing all this research and maybe guessing wrong and then losing money or in one direction or the other. Well, the problem is that you get a bunch of different companies, different like landlords, buying the same software, and they're all pricing their apartments the same based on the software. So now the software can basically say, "Oh, let's raise everybody's rents," and since a huge percentage of the market is controlled by the software, it's the same as collusion.
Interesting.
I know a lot of consumers have been calling this stuff out for a while now, and the Justice Department has been on it and is suing this company now. And it's interesting because it's like on its face, you see it as like, oh, they're helping. It's a piece of software that helps businesses price things accurately, but it does allow for price collusion in a way that didn't really exist before.
It's accidental price collusion, though, isn't it? I mean
Well, yeah, I think they're arguing that it's not, right? Because the idea is, hey, our software will help you maximize profits of your rentals, right? So it's like they're not a consumer-based thing. It's like not we're going to charge a fair amount so everybody's happy. This is like for the landlords to make more money. So
What's
there
the
is no incentive for them to actually have lower prices. The incentive for the software algorithm is to charge as much as possible, as much as they can get away with. And if it can do that because it controls a large part of the market, then it's basically collusion. It's just a very weird way of going about colluding.
What's
Like,
the
I don't think the landlords, some of them, I don't think plan this. I think they're happy,
Right.
but I don't
That's
think
why
they
I say
planned it.
accidental, but yeah. So what's the alternative?
Exactly. What's the alternative? Because I mean, the alternative is to go back to everybody has it's a secret what we should charge, and we have to research it, and we have to like make mistakes. It's a weird thing. I mean, if you look at like the stock market, like the price of stocks are like, it's all controlled by computers and what everybody's buying and selling, and that's how the price of the stock comes out, right? So this is kind of like treating the price of rent as a stock, but yeah, it's weird. What is the right thing to do?
Right. My guess is the software, if the software were to change its goal, right? The goal is a very capitalist one, right? Maximize profit for the landlords. But in theory, one could do the same thing with a different goal, that being, I'm not sure how you measure affordability. You could certainly change the target so that profitability is not the only, or is not weighted as highly amongst other goals that would include things like reasonable, rental prices, as opposed to, those that make profit.
The problem is like, what's the incentive for a company to create something like that? Because technically, a company could create something exactly like that, but who's going to pay them?
Right.
Nobody. So that almost would have to be kind of a public service or charity kind of situation, a foundation to come up with equitable rental prices.
Well, landlords would have to, in a case like that, landlords would be choosing not to maximize their profits, which is unlikely. So I also suspect that there would have to be some, much as I hate to say it, government intervention that says, okay, here's how we're setting our rental prices.
Rent controls are a thing in many cities, and of course, affordable housing initiatives are a thing in many more places, even where there are controls on. You get incentives as a builder. I don't really know much about this. We're getting to the territory of like, I don't know much about it, but I'm talking about it. But I gather that governments do basically tell companies, hey, build affordable apartments that, and then they have these rules, right? And then we will give you benefits, like we'll give you tax breaks, or we'll give you funding of some sort, or loans for building that are an advantage to you, but you have to have affordable apartments rather than just trying to build luxury apartments that that aren't helping the housing situation.
I
It it
suppose. Go ahead.
well, I mean, it's just one of those things where, like pure capitalism by itself would be horrible.
Right.
It would end up with like lots and lots of luxury apartments. And maximize the number of people in luxury apartments and maximize the number of people who are unhoused,
Yes.
right? That's what capitalism by itself. So we already have some government, incentives, rent controls, things like that to try to balance that out. But how would you do that in software? Like you would have to.
Well, there have to be some rules now that says here's the definition of what it means to be affordable. And this kind of software could be used to presumably do that.
It could be used to, to do something. I mean, I guess if the company itself, or a new company that came up with software like this also had on the other end the ability for governments, because I don't know of any foundations that actually do this. I guess there could be some, but it would have to be governments that would come in and say, well, we have these incentives to build affordable housing. We have these other incentives for various things and rent controls. Let us have an in into the software and let us tweak it. So, in other words, we can come up with this idea for some affordable rentals. And then that gets into the software, and the software says, yeah, that's not going to make any difference. And they say, oh, well, what if we adjusted it like this? And then the software said, ah, now you're bringing down prices, or
Right.
now you're housing more people because of that. I don't know. It's interesting. It's weird that this is a technology problem and that we're talking about it, but it is. There you go. This
Right.
company has created this problem by creating this software, which seemed to be good on its face, at least
It's,
for
you
its
know,
clients.
especially in the Wild West that is AI right now, that it's not going to be uncommon for AI-driven solutions to real problems to have side effects generating other problems that were unanticipated. So.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Cool this week. Gary and I were in another meeting earlier before this with a couple of other folks, including former co-host of this podcast, Randy Cassingham, who is now living on a ship, apparently off the coast of South America right now. I think Peru or Chile or something like that.
Chile, yeah.
So one of the things that I discovered some time ago is a website that is called marinetraffic.com. And what it does is it's a map that has overlaid on it every ship currently underway with the transponder, which is pretty much every ship, certainly all the commercial ships. So all of the freighters, all of the cruise ships. In fact, even here in Washington State, where we have a fairly active ferry system, all our ferry boats are on marine traffic. And you can see exactly where they are, where they're going, how fast they're going, all that kind of stuff. And in many cases, there are photos of the ship that you might be looking at. The photo might be a little bit out of date. For example, the photo for Randy's Odyssey, the VV Odyssey, is still of its former paint job, but it's the ship. It's the right ship. Anyway, I just thought that was, I personally find that fascinating. Especially when you zoom out at more or less a global level and you can see all of the patterns, all of the shipping lanes and all the crowds of ships going this way or that way or up a river or any of those different kinds of things. So anyway, marinetraffic.com. Again, as always, links in the show notes. It's kind of fun.
Yep, it is. I go there too. For me, a book I so I reread the book I've been claiming is my favorite book of all time, but I haven't read it in the second half of my life at all, like the last 20, 30 years. I read it a bunch of times when I was young, and ever since, you asked me what my favorite book is, I would have said The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And it occurred to me I haven't read it in a long time. I just needed something maybe that reminded me of days, the past when things were simpler. And also I know brought me great joy, so I decided to reread it, but I was scared rereading it because I thought, is it going to seem silly or juvenile or not as sophisticated as I remember it? And I read it and I loved it. I enjoyed it so much. And I found it to be just, I mean, at this stage of my life, just as enjoyable as I found it when I was younger. Some of the stuff in it is so interesting and well written. That was fantastic. Also, I love true sci-fi where it's real science fiction. And in addition to Hitchhiker's Guide being humor, which is just filled with humor. I mean, there's so much humor in it. It sets a whole different standard because there are sci-fi books that are called humor books, and really, there's just a few humorous situations that arise, and that's it. Hitchhiker's Guide is just page after page after page, where there's like one-liners along with ridiculous situations and all that. In addition to that, it's filled with science fiction. I mean, there are different types of spaceships and aliens and concepts and everything. It is so packed with sci-fi. I get frustrated when I read a sci-fi book. And afterwards, I think, well, the whole book was only sci-fi because they had this one little device, or they just happened to be in the future or something. And Hitchhiker's Guide is packed with stuff. And it's real sci-fi because they try to explain it. Well, that is important though, because they don't just say, oh, there's a spaceship, it could travel faster than light. Don't ask any questions. But instead, it's like it travels using this concept.
Improbability, if I'm not mistaken, yes.
This robot is depressed because, and an explanation for how it. You know why that is the case, or why the computer cannot dispense a cup of tea. It goes into explanations, makes it fantastic. Anyway, I'm so pleased to find that my favorite book is still my favorite book.
Excellent. Excellent. That's good. Yeah, I was worried that it wasn't going to live up to the expectations, but I'm glad that it did. In terms of blatant self-promotion, I would like to point folks at an interesting article. It's gotten a fair amount of reaction, especially with the video on YouTube. Are humans getting more stupid because of computers? It's askleo.com/7634. It's actually an article that I first wrote probably about 10 or 15 years ago. And the update now, of course, has to include the impact of social media. And it's interesting because I think honestly, I believe the answer to the question is no. In many ways, to the extent you believe we're stupid, we've always been this stupid. What's allowing it to look like we might be getting more stupid is that there are more opportunities to share our stupidity with each other, hence social media. But anyway, it's an interesting discussion. It's an interesting thought exercise. Are humans getting more stupid because of computers? Askleo.com/7634.
Cool. And I'll point to one of my most recent videos about how to use the new transcription features built into the latest Mac operating system. A lot of people don't know they're there just because you don't happen to use voice memos or whatever, but you can use them to transcribe just about any audio. And it's kind of neat that, you know, it wasn't that long ago when people would ask me, is there a way to do this? And I was like, no, that's it, that you have to pay for a service to do that. It's a whole thing. And now my answer is, yeah, there's a way to do that on your Mac.
Cool.
Cool.
All righty. Well, I think that wraps us up for the first episode of 2025. I still have a hard time saying 2025. Thanks as always for being here, and we will see you again or talk at you again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh238. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH Podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of Askleo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.